Welcome to the Film Florida podcast. I'm John Lux, and I'm the executive director of Film Florida. Before we get to our interview, if you're not already a member of Film Florida, please consider joining at filmflorida.org. Please also consider going to our website and donating $20.26 for our 2026 fundraising campaign. Visit the Film Florida merchandise page at filmflorida.creator-spring.com to purchase Film Florida t-shirts, sweatshirts, coffee mugs, and more. All merchandise proceeds go to the Film Florida Filmmaker Grant and Scholarship Fund. Nicole Perry is a dance choreographer as well as an award-winning movement professional working as a certified intimacy director and certified intimacy coordinator with Intimacy Professionals Education Collective, a SAG-AFTRA-accredited intimacy training program, while also serving as the director of praxis for IPEC. Nicole is a founding member of Florida Intimacy Professionals, creating community and standards for staged intimacy work in the state. Additionally, Nicole is the founder of Momentum Stage Inc., which offers professional development for artists, art educators, and arts organizations, and has delivered trainings for dancers, actors, and teachers at universities and organizations around the world. We talk all of this and more on this episode of the Film Florida podcast. Here's my conversation with Nicole Perry. Welcome to the Film Florida podcast, Nicole.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
So let's start at the beginning. What's your backstory? Help the audience get to know you a little bit.
I started my journey towards the entertainment field, I guess, when I was a dancer. I was a dancer in middle school and high school. And then in college, I decided to get my BA. I have two, actually, because of course I do. I have a BA in music and a BA in dance. And I've been teaching dance since 2005, I guess. I've been teaching dance and creating professional dance since before that time. Some colleagues, when I was in college, we had a dance company together. So since 2004, I've been creating professional dance. But then around 2010, I was asked to choreograph for a theater company. It was the first time I had done that. And once I started working for that theater company, I just really loved it. I loved the storytelling of a movement. And then I accidentally ended up in a show. Mainly it was a Christmas Carol, and one of the actors, it was like a Christmas Eve show, one of the actors didn't come, and it happened to be a show that I was at, but I had been at so many rehearsals as the choreographer, they were like, oh my gosh, this actor forgot they had a show tonight, can anybody do this? It was a very small part, it was Solicitor 2 in a Christmas Carol, so you know, we show up to Scrooge's house, and we're like, please give us money, or Scrooge's office, And I was like, I can do it. And they were like, no, silly dancing girl. This is an acting role. I was like, it's like two lines. I know them. I've heard them enough. I can do it. And once I did it, I was like, I like this too. And then started working for that company also as an actor. And I moved to Florida in 2012 to work for a theater company. And then started teaching theater and dance at a private school in Palm Beach County. And it was while I was doing that that I was introduced to the work of intimacy direction. So it was this long arc of dance to theater, now to intimacy coordination for film and TV.
Well, let's go right there. Yeah. Define intimacy coordinator. What are the basics and why is one needed on set, both theater and television? In film?
Yeah, so an intimacy director works in live performance, so theater, opera, dance. An intimacy coordinator works in recorded performance, film and TV, and verticals. But the job is pretty much the same job across the media. It's just the media that are different, and then we use those different terms to distinguish them and also to help the productions that we're on know sort of where we fit in their hierarchy and pay scale and all of that. So it's the same job, but it's a different title depending on media. And an intimacy director, intimacy coordinator, their job is to help this movement storytelling of intimate scenes. And for SAG productions in particular, those are scenes of simulated sex and nudity. The qualification for SAG productions of hiring an intimacy coordinator if your scenes have simulated sex and nudity, but there are other reasons you might want one. And so it's the movement storytelling of those scenes, but it's also to create confident actors in that movement storytelling, which is how the storytelling ends up being good. We have to be able to help those actors uphold their boundaries or advocate for their boundaries. And so we act as a third-party communication system between actors and the people who ultimately hire and fire them, like production. And oftentimes a director is an executive producer of the show, or actors feel like, if I told the director, no, I don't want to do the scene this way, then I'm not going to get asked back to this show or the next. And TV, especially when directors are working a couple episodes here and then they move to another show, work a couple episodes over there, like I'll never get to work again if this director doesn't like me. So it's a way to mediate some of those power dynamics if an actor has some boundaries around the content that they're performing, so that they don't have to directly say no to someone who has hiring, firing power over them. And then it's about communication of what is this scene and its importance in the storytelling. So again, that ultimate movement part can be really good. Is when we read something in a script that says like they kiss, there can be a million different things that means to the director, to me, to the actors. And so we all have to get on the same page in order to create that story well. So there's some advocacy, there's some communication, and then there's choreography.
Now, besides the obvious stuff, which you kind of mentioned a little bit, like give us an example of one or two things that, you know, kind of pique your interest when you see a script that most people probably wouldn't think of needing an intimacy coordinator for.
So familial intimacy could be one of those things, especially if we're working with minors and we want to make sure we have a really professional set, you know, a kiss to grandma or sitting on a family member's lap. Having an intimacy coordinator can help with that, but also just having another human that child can talk to can be really helpful in the movement storytelling part. Another thing might be passionate kissing. It's not a requirement on SAG project. Well, it's not a requirement period on SAG projects so that you have an intimacy coordinator, but that doesn't even land in the SAG definition right now. Passionate kissing, so many things have passionate kissing. And sometimes they don't look awesome. So we can help that movement storytelling along. Like the kiss should have a story to it. So let us choreograph that kiss. Let us help you make it part of the story instead of just they kiss. Some other things that we might be helpful for are scenes that require a lot of emotional vulnerability from an actor. And that might be scenes of self-harm, or if they're having like a panic attack or anxiety attack. That happens to be a specialty of mine because I've done a lot of training in trauma-informed practices and how trauma-informed practices relate to creativity. And often those things require some breath work, which is often, again, part of intimate scenes and like simulated sex. Breath work is usually part of that. That can be very vulnerable, even if it's a sex scene that's off camera. The sounds of sex that happen can be very vulnerable for an actor. When it's not words in a script, that can be challenging. So I think there's a variety of reasons you might want an intimacy coordinator, and thinking of like, is the actor physically or emotionally really vulnerable in this moment can help guide that choice.
And now you've mentioned an intimacy coordination as involving advocacy, communication, and choreography. How do those three elements work together during the filming of a stage process?
So I think people get caught up a lot on the advocacy side of like, the intimacy coordinator is going to come in and tell me I can't do any of these things that I want to do, which is not my job. My job is to help tell the story. Like I'm there to create the same art that everybody else is there to make. So the advocacy part is actually about what needs have to be met for these actors to engage in the storytelling confidently, because that's how we're going to have the best process, but also the best product at the end is if they're able to fully invest in doing the thing and they don't have part of their brain that's still monitoring their safety or their scene partner's safety, or being like, is this weird? It feels kind of weird. I don't know if it's weird. If we can set some, if they know that they can set their boundaries and have those upheld, then that part of their brain can shift into just doing the job. So the advocacy is around, like, let's get these needs met so the actor can do this job confidently. And if these needs can't be met, then let's figure out what the other steps are. Like, do we need a body double for this scene? That could be something that we do. So that's really what the advocacy part is. I'm not advocating for less sex or less spice. I'm advocating for what do we need to tell this story. And then the communication is, as I said before, kind of easing those pathways, especially if we're talking to someone who hires or fires. And then making sure things get done on time. You know, the SAG rule is 48 hours notice on your intimacy rider, whether that's simulated sex or nudity. And that I always tell independent productions and student productions, even if they're not SAG, is this is like industry standard. This is low-hanging fruit that we can all do, is make sure our actors are aware at least 48 hours before filming of what the expectations are for this scene. What's the level of nudity? What are their coverage garment options? What's the director's vision? And those writers put it all in paperwork form. And for independent films or student films, I always recommend that if they have a lawyer doing their contracts, that they include those. But we can at least communicate about those things and make sure that the actor is aware in a timely fashion. So part of the communication is also around timeliness. And then on SAG productions, it is around legal. What do we legally have to do? And making sure that paperwork is done in the legal timeframe. And then once we know what are the needs that we have to have met, we can get it all written down or we can talk about it. And then we can create the movement around it. And when we're on set, I always do advocate for a rehearsal, which we don't always get, but I always like to ask for one. And if we don't get one, that we at least get a walkthrough, talk through of what the movement is going to be. So that one, it just makes filming go faster. People aren't guessing what is happening. It just goes much more easily and smoothly. But again, it helps that confidence level so that actors can dive in. And so then there's choreography and communication folded together. But I'm still keeping in my mind, this is what the actor said they need to do this confidently, and trying to make sure that I meet all of those needs. So by the time we hit set, those three things are all folded into each other and just becoming the process of intimacy coordination.
Well, now let's talk about the production timeline. At what point should, and I use that word importantly, should you be brought into a project? And what are kind of some of the first conversations you have with producers or directors?
Should at the same time you're crewing up for every other position, especially if it's a scene of simulated sex or nudity. Like, it's in the script, you're not surprised by it. Like, don't get to that scene and call me because it's too late. 48 hours on your projects. Like, we need 48 hours to get it to the actor, so we need even more time in front of that period. So the same time you're crewing up for anything is the best time to do it. The second best time is when you go, oh, actually, the actor has some needs around this. Maybe the actor has asked, does this project have an intimacy coordinator attached to it? Maybe the actor has said, like, I'm not sure that that's something that I'm interested in doing. Hire an intimacy coordinator. Maybe the director has said, like, I don't really love directing sex scenes. There are directors who do not love that. Maybe hire an intimacy coordinator to support them so they can just focus on the parts of directing that they do really love, and the intimacy coordinator can facilitate those other parts. So just do it early. Don't wait until the day before you're filming to call me, because then it's too late. And it does take time. It really does take time, because I read the script, I talk to the director, producer, writer, whoever is sort of in charge of storytelling, showrunner. We have a meeting about that before I go and talk to the actors, and I talk to the actors, and then I come back. And like, there's also why we charge a prep day. It's industry standard to prepare for your work. And so we have a prep day as well as our filming day. And it does take time to get all of these pieces in place.
Now, actors often talk about how technical these scenes can be. How do you balance the emotional storytelling with the very practical choreography that's required for these things?
One of the things I ask actors when we're having our intake call, whether that's on Zoom or on the phone, or sometimes it's in the makeup trailer at 6 a.m. before we go to set, some actors do want a lot of choreography of my hand goes here and then my head goes here and it lasts about 4 beats. And some actors are like, yeah, just I know how to act and fill in this moment. Just tell me what the shape is or what the goal is. And so I always ask actors what they want in terms of choreography, because some of them also get just super overwhelmed if I was to give them beat by beat choreography. And some of them find that very anchoring. So I try to ask what they want and support that. And I also ask the director how they want to work with me. Do they see this as a choreography job where I'm creating it beat by beat? Do they already have this all sketched out in their brain and they know exactly what they want and they want me there to make sure they're not crossing any boundaries and to offer some movement insight? How do they want with me? So I'm trying to balance those needs as well. Like, it's a collaborative position and the director has their creative process and the actor has their creative process and I have mine. So how do we work all together? And so I tend to have kind of two modes of working. And one is super technical beat by beat. And one is sort of more of a like landmark thing of like, as long as the hand is between the shoulder and the elbow, we're good. So feel free to play, to touch, to find space to be in between that space. Or if we're walking and kissing, which are terrible scenes to choreograph that everyone loves to write, by the time we get to this mark, we should have turned around in our position. And by the time we hit the bed, the shirt should be off, and kind of giving landmarks like that so that actors feel like they can fill in the space in between. So it's not, for me, not so much how do I craft the moment? It's more like how do we craft the moment in a way that supports everybody's creative process.
No, that makes sense. Now, for filmmakers who've never worked with an intimacy coordinator before, that's probably a little bit intimidating, knowing, you know, how experienced you might be with these different situations. What usually surprises them most about the process when they bring someone like you on set?
I think it's one that I'm not the police or HR, especially if they've never worked with an intimacy coordinator before. Like, that is not my job. I am not interested in being a cop or an HR person. Those are not things for me. I really am interested in how do we tell this story well. The other one is the power of a movement specialist in these moments, that like one note about eye contact, one note about watching the breath move the body, one note about the quality of a touch between people can change a story so specifically. And you know, I have a joke with my colleagues of like, I have two goals when I go to set every day. My goals are be completely unflappable. I will just, okay, here we are. Set's on fire. Doesn't matter. I will be the calm one. And number two is give one note that makes all of the difference. That's usually it. And usually I only get to give one note because we're like moving along and we got to change our coverage and the director's jumping in there and makeup's in, fixing people up. And like, I usually only get to give one note. So it better be the right note. And that one note, so often when it comes from a choreographer, can make such a difference in storytelling.
Yeah. Now, boundaries, you've used that word a few times, and I know you've used it in previous conversations we've had, are obviously part of the work. How do you create an environment where actors feel comfortable expressing those boundaries? And do some actors push back about the boundaries because they believe it stifles their acting?
Yeah, I think it starts in that conversation with actors. And I have those conversations one-on-one so that, or I try to as much as possible have them one-on-one so that actors can say everything that they want to say and not feel maybe pressured by what their scene partner is saying or not saying to say or not say something for themselves. And so I invite those conversations in a private setting. And I also talk about boundaries as being needs. And I think I said that earlier, of like, what do we need to be able to perform this confidently? And to me, that's what a boundary is. A boundary is a need that I have to have met in order to do my best work. And if this need doesn't get met, maybe I'm not going to work at all, right? Maybe we need to get a double in here. Or if this need doesn't get met, I'll probably do the work, but it's not going to be my best because, again, half my brain's going to be monitoring my safety or whatever. So I also talk to actors about that. Like, what do they need to do this confidently? And a lot of actors feel like they're allowed to have needs, even if they feel like they're not allowed to have boundaries. And it helps them think about it in a different way. And some actors are still like, I don't have any boundaries. Or some actors are like, whatever the director wants. And I'm like, great. And if anything comes up on the day, or if you think of anything that you might need to help support your performance, just let me know. And you know, we talk about like the coverage garments for scenes of simulated sex and nudity and the barriers that we use in scenes of simulated sex. And like all of these are just tools to help us do our jobs confidently and get our needs met. So boundaries are not necessarily about, I don't want to do this thing or I won't do this thing. It's really about, what do I need so I can do the thing?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, back at the beginning of this conversation, we talked a decent amount about your dance and your choreography background. How does that training inform the way you approach staging and blocking of these scenes?
I am a big movement nerd. I love movement. You know, I have, as I said earlier, that I have a BA in dance. I also have an MFA, and that's in interdisciplinary arts. And my two arts that I intertwined for that degree were dance and theater. And then I'm also a Laban Bartinieff movement analyst, which is a particular movement language that looks at all of the facets of movement. Might be generous, might be overstating it, but like looks at movement as body and looks at movement as energy and looks at movement as shape and as movement as use of space. And I really love that system because there's so many different ways to enter into the movement language, because I can be looking at an actor and a director can be looking at an actor and the director will lean over to me and be like, it just needs to be more passionate. Can you make it more passionate? And then I'm like, probably, but what does passionate mean to you? Is it about the tempo at which we're moving? Is it about the contact between bodies and how much contact is between the bodies? Is it about the size of the movement? Does it need to be bigger? Does it need to be smaller? Is it about how the bodies are touching each other and the shapes that they're making that we see in the camera? Like all of those things could be true or it could be none of those things, but having that Laban Bartinieff language lets me think of movement in kind of these different categories to ask questions like that about like, what makes it passionate to you? Or the wonderful, like, can you make it hotter? Like, sure. I don't know what that means. Does that mean faster? Does that mean more movement? Does that mean movement that has more force behind it? I don't know what that means, but it gives me a way to ask that. And also sound is movement. And we don't always think of sound as movement, but it is. And so all of those things that I'm asking about movement could also relate to vocalization. Is it going to be really light and breathy, or does it have some force that's behind it? Is it kind of all over the place, or is it really direct in how it sounds? And we can ask those questions about how we're vocalizing, especially scenes of simulated sex, that could continue our storytelling. And when I think of movement and sound as part of the story, that's really choreography. Like choreography, to me, in this context, has to be storytelling. There is such a thing as abstract choreography. You can go see performance art and modern dance and be like, that was a dance for dance sake. But choreography in this aspect has to tell the story or it isn't useful. And so I'm always trying to get at, how do I use my movement skills to tell this story more clearly or help the actors tell this story more clearly?
Interesting. Now, the role of an intimacy coordinator has gained significant visibility and has become more standardized in the industry in recent years. From your perspective, how has the profession evolved in the last, say, 3 to 5 years?
Well, I mean, we've only existed for 8. So the last 3 to 5 years is like half of that.
Yep.
So a lot. I mean, when I did my first training, I was with Tony Cena and Alicia Rodas, who at the time were two of the 3 founders of Intimacy Directors International, which no longer exists. Antonia was talking about intimacy direction. She was the first credited intimacy director in 2017. And Alicia, this was the fall of 2018. And Alicia had just wrapped the first season of The Deuce, which was the first show with an intimacy coordinator. It was on HBO. They were the first person to use that term for the role. They had both just come in with these credits. And the training at that time contained things that like blew my mind. I came to it as a movement professional, as most of us did at that time. You know, those of us that were training in 2017, 18, 19 were movement people. We were dance and dance choreographers in theater, and we were fight directors, stunt coordinators. You know, so people were coming to this work from other movement modalities, also because we were getting asked to do this work. You know, there would be a scene of maybe non-consensual intimacy, and then the stunt coordinator would be asked to choreograph that as well. And so people were coming for training really as a way of using their movement skills differently, most folks. And then that 3-day training that I did with them in St. Petersburg, actually, at the Sarasota Opera Rehearsal Studio, the whole first day was about power dynamics and consent, and how power dynamics influence consent and basically make it non-existent. And there was just that whole conversation was so eye-opening and put names on feelings that I had had as a choreographer, as a teacher, but also as an actor and dancer of like, oh, that's why that feels weird. Or that's why I feel like I can't say no to things that I don't want to do, or I have to say yes to things that I'm not sure about. It's not me. It's the whole system. I'm not a weirdo. This is how the system is designed. And it was so enlightening and relieving to have that conversation. And then as we have progressed and worked, like, we've seen the training shift. You know, the training now has SAG-AFTRA accreditations for the training bodies. They have a certain number of hours that you have to have in certain amount of subjects. You know, I was in one of these training modules that had all of these things, but like, we had no goals of accreditation with SAG at that point. We were all just trying to do this job better and do it in a way that felt like it was codified, because the goal was, and still is for me, of like, let's make this professional. I actually can't make this less weird. They're doing simulated sex scenes with your coworkers. Like, if you feel weird about that, that's okay. It's a weird ask. Most people go to work and are told, like, don't touch your coworkers, definitely don't kiss them or have sex with them. And then actors go to work and we're like, oh, this person that you're just meeting today in the makeup trailer, you're going to pretend to have sex with them for like at least an hour. It's going to be a thing. It's kind of weird. And so my job is not necessarily to make it less weird. My job is to make it more professional, so that it has the same professional handling as every other scene that we have. And that was the gap that we were noticing in 2017 and 18. These scenes just weren't being treated professionally. People were saying like, oh, just go for it. Do whatever you do at home. And it's like, we don't do that at any other point in acting. We're not like, here's a sword, just do what you do at home. Like, we give you training on how to do that safely. You are in the character when you are delivering the lines. You're not doing what you do at home or just going for it. We have a craft. We have choreography and blocking. We have character development conversations around scenes. And these scenes just didn't have that. So we were like, how do we do that? how do we treat these scenes with the same professionalism that every other scene gets treated with? And the trainings were built around that we really spent so much time talking about power dynamics and consent, but also doing choreography and thinking about what goes into choreographing, not just scenes of simulated sex, but a kiss and a striptease. And also, how do we bring these skills to scenes of familial intimacy or casual intimacy? And by the time I did my longer training in 2019, the job had definitely accelerated. You know, we had somebody who was booked for the first Broadway show, which opened in later in 2019. Frankie and Johnny and the Clair de Lune was the first Broadway show to have an intimacy director. That was Claire Warden, who was also part of the training. And we had so many more people were starting to hear about this thing, but it also still wasn't adopted very much. It was like, oh, these big companies, HBO, Broadway, these people are doing these things. And like, isn't it nice that you have that training? And it seems like maybe it could be interesting, but also maybe it might be a fad. So just stand by. And then once we got to 2020, you know, we stopped everything for a while. And then when we came back, we were so much more conscious about not just the emotional safety issues of intimacy, but some of the physical safety issues of intimacy. And like, actually, do we want to touch our mucous membranes? Because your lips are mucous membranes and not everybody thinks about that. Like, do we actually want to touch mucous membranes with our coworker? And what professional mitigations do we have for that? Like mouthwash or just having a conversation about no tongue. Let's talk about it. And so I think that helped accelerate it, as did the Me Too movement. Sometimes people think that the intimacy directed intimacy coordination came out of the Me Too movement, which is untrue. They definitely have some similarities in timeline, but I think intimacy coordination adoption was accelerated by the Me Too movement. So between the Me Too movement and COVID, I do think that we had some obvious need for this work in both theater and film. And then we also changed our training. Our training in COVID moved to online, which meant that a lot more people could get this training, because when I trained, you had to go in person. You had to do, I think my first workshop was a 1 day. And that was actually when Laura Reichert of Theatrical Intimacy Education was teaching at the University of Miami. And she did a 1 day for community folks there. And that was actually my first introduction to the work. And then I did my 3 day in Sarasota with Tonya and Alicia. And then I did 9 days in Toronto with Tonya and Alicia and Claire and Siobhan Richardson. And like, it was all in person. And you had to go somewhere, get a hotel or an Airbnb and do the training. It was great. And it also makes it a little less accessible for folks that may not have the time or the money to do that. So as so many things shifted to online, so did our training. And the training became much more accessible. And as the training became more accessible, more people were like, I'm learning about this thing. I'm doing this thing. I see the need for this thing. I want this thing. It just became more of a known quantity in both theater and film. And I think that also helped the job shift. And now, you know, 2020, the SAG contract said we use a good faith effort to hire an intimacy coordinator for scenes of simulated sex and nudity. And then 2026, intimacy coordinators have just unionized with SAG. Our contract went live less than a month ago. And so the industry has said, like, this role is here to stay. This is not a fad. So if you're not on board, get on board. We've unionized around it. We have written contracts around it. And I expect that as we go into SAG negotiations again this summer, that there will be some new language around intimacy coordinators. Whether that makes it in the final contract or not, it remains to be seen. But I expect there will be more conversation about it now that it has become even more a facet of the industry than it was the last time we wrote it down.
Now, you mentioned quite a bit in the conversation about the relationship with SAG-AFTRA. But what about the smaller projects that don't involve SAG-AFTRA, what would you say to productions, again, who are light on budget and watching every penny? I mean, this seems like a role that a lot of people that would be like, yeah, no, we don't really need it. So how do you talk to a production unsure about whether or not they actually need an intimacy coordinator and whether or not they can pay for it? And if not, what the liabilities are for not having it?
Yeah. I always use SAG as like the industry standard example of like, this is what the industry says is standard.
Mm-hmm.
And there are so many of those things that we can do as independent productions or student productions of like, we can make sure actors know about their intimate scenes. We can maybe even give them a writer for it at least 48 hours ahead of time. Like those are things that we absolutely can do that the industry says is standard. We can not ask for nudity in an audition because that should not be a qualification for a job. Those are things the industry says are standard. We can do some of those things. So it's like SAG is our industry standard. What is it from there that we can do? SAG says scenes of simulated sex and nudity. Okay, if my script says simulated sex and nudity, I should probably at least ask about an intimacy coordinator. I should go to the Florida Intimacy Professionals website and look up who's in my area that I might be able to use, because that's the industry standard is that we try. Thinking of it as industry standard and trying to follow those as much as possible, because again, part of this role is professionalizing these scenes. And then thinking about what is the purpose of this scene. I truly believe that intimate scenes in a movie are not gratuitous, that they are part of the story, because they tell us something about the character. It might be how the character likes to have sex. It might be who the character likes to have sex with. It might be how they kiss. But we're learning something about the character in these scenes. But if this is also a pivotal storytelling moment in these characters' journeys, maybe we want another storytelling specialist in intimacy along for that scene to do those things. And is this something that your director feels confident and comfortable directing? Again, not every director wants to do that. Sometimes directors are hired because they're personally attached to the project in some other way. They have some emotional resonance with it. Sometimes it's because they were available. Sometimes if they have some other skill that the production really needs, like, oh, this director is great at the violence and the stunts. This maybe is not that. So do we want to support our director in this? Do we want to support our actors in this? Are they actors that could use some physical choreography support? Are they actors that have expressed that they maybe have some boundaries or concerns by saying, is there an intimacy coordinator? I don't know if I want to do full nudity. I might be interested in this. But you know, we can as we're having those conversations, we might hear something that makes us think an intimacy coordinator is a good investment. And also, whatever my rate is, it's cheaper than a lawsuit, I'm sure. So we can think about that. But I always like to think about that one last, because I don't want to threaten people into working with me. But I have a sliding scale for rates, as do most intimacy professionals that I know. Like my student film rate is not the same as my SAG rate. It's not the same as my indie film rate. And I have other things that influence my rate, like what's the content? I mean, if it's a 60% orgy, that's a really different ask of me than a passionate kissing scene between two actors. And so my rates kind of flux around that. And also, you know, this is the Film Florida podcast. And if you are in the state of Florida and you are making a movie that talks about queer love or queer sex, I give you a discount on my rate because I want you to make that story here in Florida. And I want you to be able to say that your set was as professional as it could possibly be, because you might be getting looked at a little sideways by some folks. So I do sliding scale things based off of tier, based off of content, and try to make it accessible. Because also, if you want to work with me, I want you to be able to work with me. If you want an intimacy coordinator on your set, because nobody has to. There's no police, again, being like, oh, you should have had one. Nope, nobody has to. So if you want one, I want you to be able to have that. And maybe that's not me. Maybe that is somebody that's more local to you so that you don't have to pay mileage or a hotel for me to come up to Tampa or Gainesville to do your film. Or you don't have to fly me to Ohio to do it. And you have people in Ohio. Maybe it's reaching out to somebody who can help you make those connections, which is part of why the Florida Intimacy Professionals website exists.
Well, talk a little bit more about that. I know you train and teach others to be in this field. So tell us what that looks like and what materials are available if somebody is interested.
Yeah, I work for IPEC, which is the Intimacy Professionals Education Collective. We are one of the SAG-AFTRA accredited training bodies for intimacy coordinators. And so our intimacy director curriculum is built the same way. Just as a side note for folks who work in both theater and film, Actors Equity and Stage Directors and Choreographers, which are the two big unions in theater, don't have these unionized standards yet that SAG does. We're hoping something, some kind of language is coming, but right now it's not required. It's not advocated for in those unions like it is in the SAG projects, but we use the same standards. So again, SAG's a great industry standard. So if SAG says you have to have 75 hours in these subjects to be an intimacy coordinator, we say you have to have 75 hours in these subjects to be an intimacy director too, because the job is the job. It's the media that's different. And I work as our director of praxis and certification. So in that role, it's really about how do we take what we know and put it into practice? How do we move from theory into creative process, which is what excites me about work in general, whether I'm being a dance educator or a choreographer or an intimacy professional. I love taking these ideas of power dynamics and consent and movement theory and being able to bring it out into the world. And so my job at IPEC is to help mold our curriculum in a way that gears people not just to these online lectures, but into actual practice. How do they take what they know and put it out in the world? And then we do offer certification for folks who have those hours plus a certain amount of experience and can pass an interview panel with three other professionals in the field. So the training itself, those subjects have been set by SAG, but it's power and consent. It's trauma-informed practices. It's conflict resolution. It is anti-racism. It is gender and sexuality studies. And it is movement. And I know you asked earlier what's changed in this profession. And besides being a little bit more accessible and growing, one of the things that has also changed is kind of the demographics of who we see coming into this job. Like then when I started, it was all movement folks. But now as someone who works for a training body, a lot of what we see all along, we have always seen actors being like, how do I do this job? I find it so beneficial. How do I do that? Or other people in the industry, like directors and choreographers being like, how do I do this job? I see it as beneficial or use of my skills. But now we're getting a lot of folks that maybe have some other background of like social work or mental health or sex education. And so they're coming in and they maybe have where I came in with the movement skills and had to learn the power and consent and the conflict negotiation, they're coming in with some of that consent and maybe gender and sexuality stuff that are needing to learn the movement skills. So our training body offers all of those things. To be SAG-AFTRA accredited, we have to do that. And we offer it online. We offer them in person. And like I said, we do offer certification. But I love teaching. I am also a teacher. It's part of what I do. I train dance teachers and consent forward practices for dance. And that looks like having trauma-informed teaching practices from your syllabus to your grading, but also in how or whether or not you touch in a dance class. So I love working with teachers, but I also just love teaching. And that's part of my work as well outside of IPEC is doing workshops. Like I just came back from a week-long residency at the University of Tampa, where I was in both their dance and their film department. And in the dance department, we were looking at trauma-informed pedagogy, and I had two classes with the pedagogy classes and workshops for the dance majors and a faculty workshop. And in the film department, we were looking specifically at the intimacy coordinator as a collaborator. And so I was in two of their classes that had mainly directors in it, directors, writers, and looking like, how do you write for an intimacy coordinator to know what you mean? How do you talk to an intimacy coordinator when they're on set? Hey, what do you do when there's not an intimacy coordinator on set, but you still want to apply some of these principles of consent? And, you know, we talked about kissing as being a scene that like every director is probably going to have to direct a kiss at some point in their directing career. So how do you do that in a way that's clear and that offers actors opportunities to have consent or to be like, hey, can we just say no tongue? And how do we have those conversations on set? And I love teaching college students as well, because I do believe like we have changed the industry a lot over the past 8 years, and there is still a lot of space for change in the industry. And I think, you know, college students are one place that we start making that change, because then they expect these things when they go out into the world of like, oh, well, we need an intimacy coordinator, or we at least have to talk about consent before we do this kiss. You know, and I do work on a lot of student films. I'm leaving our podcast today to go work on a student film because they're telling these stories and they deserve the same kind of support of everybody else.
Nicole, in addition to everything else you got going on, where can people see some of your work that they might recognize?
So the most exciting thing is MIA, which is a new Peacock series. It drops, I think it's May 7th in Peacock. It was filmed in Florida. What? I know. We haven't had a full series film here in a while. So to have this whole series film in South Florida last year was really exciting. But I was the intimacy coordinator for the series. And that comes out in May. And there is a sneak preview of it at the Miami Film Festival. And then on my website, you can see work samples and also link to my IMDb of what other shows that I've worked on that you might want to check out.
Excellent. Very exciting about MIA for sure. Well, Nicole, tell our listeners where they can learn more about you and the profession, and, you know, just like where should people go to learn more about you and the work that you and your colleagues do?
So my website is my name. It's NicolePerry.org. And there you can see some work samples. You can get my resume. You can also get my book. I have a book that is specifically for dance and theater teachers about consent-forward trauma-informed practices. But I was talking about it in the Women in Film workshop that I did. And one of the film teachers was like, I'm ordering your book. I know I can use this too. And I was like, oh yeah, film teachers could use this too. So I have a book that's available there. And you can reach out to me from my website. There's a contact page if you want to reach out to me about workshops or about working on your project. And then FloridaIntimacyProfessionals.org is for folks in Florida who want an intimacy professional. This website is like a directory of here are folks in Florida who are doing this job. But what I love about this website is the fact that it is not built by me. It's built by community. And so anyone in Florida who wants to be on this website sends in an application that then is vetted by entertainment industry professionals. We have theater directors, we have film directors, we have talent agents, we have stage managers, we have John Lux, and all of these people. You know, these people review the applications and say, like, this is a person who not only has met these training requirements that SAG says makes a minimum requirement, but they seem like a person who has a thoughtful creative process to this work. Because having a quote unquote good intimacy professional on your set is really an investment in the industry. It's an investment in your actors, in your storytelling, in your directors. It's even in your crew of just seeing like we are handling these things professionally, whether it's a scene of simulated sex or it's a scene of self-harm or it's a scene of a kid sitting on Santa's lap or a bunch of kids that have to go sit on Santa's lap for a long time. Like We just have somebody here to help these conversations along. And so Florida Intimacy Professionals, one, is open for application. If you're in Florida and you are an intimacy professional, please reach out to us. We want to be in community with you. And we have conversations as intimacy professionals there about, hey, what are our rates? And what should we be charging? And this place reached out, but they only offered this. Is this correct? What should I tell them? Things like that. We have conversations about best practices. We just published a new resource for theater directors about collaborating with an intimacy professional that we and the theater folks on the board created together. And it's meant to be a way for people in Florida to find intimacy professionals, but also to find resources. And so we also have their training organizations, not just IPIC, who I work for, but other organizations, and both nationally and internationally. And then resources. Like if you need the SAG hotline, that is on there, because you know sometimes you can't find it when you Google things, but it's linked right there. If you need the hotline for Equity or for AGMA, which is the Musicians Guild for opera, but it also includes a lot of classical dance as well. So ballet companies, if you need that hotline, it's all on our website and we put that there. So FloridaIntimacyProfessionals.org is a great place to go to connect with intimacy professionals in Florida, whether to be one or to find one. And then Intimacy Professionals Education Collective, I do work for them. So I do think we're the best at what we do in training intimacy professionals. And our website is IPIC, which is I-T-E-C, IPICintimacy.com.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank you not only for being a great Film Florida member through the years and a friend, but thanks for spending some time with us today to share your story and, of course, your expertise, because I learn something new every time I have a conversation with you. So I appreciate you being on the Film Florida podcast with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Film Florida podcast. For more information about Film Florida, go to filmflorida.org. And like or follow our social media pages. If you're not already a member of Film Florida, please consider joining at filmflorida.org. Please also consider going to our website and donating $20.26 for our 2026 fundraising campaign. Check out the Film Florida merchandise at filmflorida.creator-spring.com. And please remember to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.